What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Martian MMA Podcast. This week, we're going to be talking about the UFC Atlantic City card going down this weekend, March 30th, 2024, headlined by Aaron Blanchfield versus Manon Fierot. Got 14 fights going down from Atlantic City this weekend. My neighbor state over here in Pennsylvania won't be attending this card, though. Didn't quite really catch the eye of me. And there's also going to be a pay-per-view in a few months in Newark, I believe. I think UFC 302 is the number. So we'll just, you know, save our money and our effort for that kind of card. You only want to spend so much time in New Jersey, you know. And Ozzy won't be here this week. You know, he's dealing with a little bit of a family, you know, health trouble. So he's got, you know, bigger things on his mind this week than some of these prelim level UFC fights. So we'll hope to have him back in the future. But check him out, you know, on Twitter to see what he's talking about, his Bet MMA and, you know, his fight numbers venture that he's launching with some other guys, John Kelly's project. So definitely check that out and see what's going on there. And before we get into this week, you know, last week, I would say I was wrong about a good portion of what I said. You know, solo podcast last week, I would say 70% of what I said last week was wrong, incorrect. So hopefully didn't lose you guys too much money. It was definitely a losing week for me. But overall, just the money lines, I think, were really, really bad in general. Severino, Gibson, Simon, Quarantillo, Rebos, you know, all just no good. And they were all underdogs, right? And I'm just realizing that, you know, I got to get less and less confident with some of these underdog plays. And what I've been saying for the past, you know, few weeks is just some of these fights, man, you're just better off live betting. You're better off waiting to see how they play out and then just taking them then. That, you know, will be, you know, a pretty main focus of my strategy here going forward. But I'm still going to give you guys my opinions on the money line before the fights, the props before the fights, and just look to mostly focus more on the prop side of things instead of, you know, chasing some of these underdogs. You know, there were past years where underdogs were hitting often and easy, and I just think the money lines are getting a little bit harder to beat in MMA. And we're going to, you know, adapt the strategy and move forward like that. So with that being said, we're going to get into all these fights. Got 14 fights going down this weekend. And we're going to start things from the top. Actually, you know what, guys? Let's change it up and start from the bottom this week. You know, the timestamps are in the description. If you guys, you know, want to fast forward and not listen to these prelim fights, you can always just go ahead and hit the timestamps and go ahead and fast forward to the main card fights. But I'll switch it up a little bit this week and we'll start from the bottom. Angel Pacheco, Callan Loughran kicking things off in the bantamweight division. Odds for this one, Loughran -350, Pacheco +285. So we got Angel Pacheco going up in weight here, going down in weight, dropping from 45 to 35. And last time out, he was in that war against Danny Silva on the Contender Series. And he's getting a short notice opportunity here, kind of gifted to him, honestly. But in that Danny Silva fight, I mean, he just took an ass kicking, right? I mean, he was getting lit up with strikes that entire fight, kept coming forward, showed great durability in that fight. You got to wonder, will that durability transfer over now that he is dropping down in weight for this fight? And before that, though, he picked up a nice win in CFFC, you know, got dropped early on in that fight, but then just withstood the storm from a fighter named Vilson Nedroni. And I thought he looked pretty solid there. You know, he had good composure after getting hurt, and he worked his way back into the fight and was able to land his own flying knee and choke out his opponent there. So I think Angel's a decent fighter, but I do think that he will be outmatched here by Pacheco, by Loughran. The money line might be a tad wide, but I don't have a ton of faith in Pacheco, so I'm not too interested in his money line. And the bet I'm looking at in this fight is Loughran by decision. So Loughran, you know, an Irish little spark plug fighter, kind of short, muscular guy, throws a lot of lead hand strikes, you know, a lot of jabs, lead left hooks. And he was knocking out his fighters on the Cage Warriors regional promotion. But I think when he starts taking a step up, we're going to see him having, you know, less success with the knockouts. And he also likes to grapple a fair bit, you know, hit some takedowns in the fight against Lapolis. and was showing a good leg-lace game there, good control-based game. So the decision bet, plus 250 for Lagren for me, is going to be my bet on this fight. Just, you know, kind of relying on the toughness of Pacheco. Hopefully it transfers down with the weight. And I believe that Lagren will be just throwing a lot of lead hands, looking to grapple, and that will be, you know, looking good for our decision instead of the... You're basically just fading the knockout for Lagren. So I like that decision bet to start off the card. Next fight, the Premier Division, Andre Petroski, Jacob Malkoon. Great grappling fight here. Malkoon minus 233, Petroski plus 198. One of the more interesting fights on the card for me, and my money line side and bet is going to be Petroski here. Have a bet already locked in on Petroski, no scorecards at plus money. It's gotten bet down a little bit, but I think anything under like minus 150 is good for Petroski, no scorecards. Just much more finishing equity for Petroski here. I also just like Petroski money line and decision here. I'm just thinking we're looking at a competitive grappling fight. You know, you got Malkoon, who's an Australian single leg takedown expert. His entire game revolves around that single leg. And the guys he's beaten in the UFC aren't really equipped to deal with that. You know, AJ Dobson, Abdul Razak Al Hassan, and his most recent one, Maximov, who injured himself right away in that fight. I just think that Malkoon has beaten some really easy competition, and Petroski is going to be much better equipped to deal with the takedowns. You know, he has a wrestling background. He trains at a good gym with a lot of wrestlers. He fought Wellington Turman in a competitive back and forth grappling fight that he consistently came up on top of those grappling transitions. And he showed good cardio in that fight. You know, we've seen him slow down in fights like the GM3 fight, which had a good amount of striking in. He slowed down in that one. But I think Petroski's comfortable grappling. He can grapple hard for 15 minutes. And I think that's going to be this type of fight. So I don't have as much concern about Petroski gassing out. He did get knocked out in his last fight by Pereira, but Malkoon is not known for throwing hard strikes at all. So I'm thinking we're going to be looking at a competitive grappling decision between these two. And I just think that Petroski is the better overall grappler, man. And he's tested against better competition. And the fight I'm really looking at here, I mentioned the Petroski fight against Turman. The Malkoon side is the Brendan Allen fight. Now, Malkoon was taking down Brendan Allen a lot in that fight, and he just wasn't able to do a whole lot with his positions. He doesn't really chase submissions. He's mostly looking to control and land some pitter-patter ground and pound shots, but Brendan Allen was just able to reverse position a lot of times in that fight because Malkoon's top game just isn't that dangerous. So if Malkoon gets takedowns against Petroski here, I think Petroski's got a great chance at standing up from them, reversing those takedowns, coming out on top of the grappling scramble here, and I just trust Petroski a lot more. So 2-1, first underdog bet of the card I like. And as I mentioned, Petroski no scorecards, money line, and decision for me here. So I'll be, you know, pretty deep on Petroski, but the value is there. 70% for Malkoon, I just think, is way off. And I'll be waiting to enter in on the money line because the line on Petroski just keeps on going up. The next fight is in the women's flyweight division. Melissa Gatto taking on Victoria Dudikova. Odds for this one have Gatto minus 151, Dudikova plus 131. A lot of action on Dudikova this week. The early side is definitely attracting her the most action, if that sentence even fucking makes sense. Oh, yeah, so I just updated the prices. She's already minus 146 for Gatto. And as I just mentioned with Petroski, he's already up to plus 210. So you're better off waiting on that one. And for this fight, I think Gatto wins. You know, she's the bigger woman here. Dudikova is the one moving up in weight. And Dudikova just fought Jinyu Frye, a very small woman who used to fight at 105. And she tried to take her down three times, and she failed all three times. You know, this is a smaller woman who Frye does have good takedown defense, but she is a 39-year-old woman after all. And, you know, Dudikova wasn't able to take her down. I'm just not too impressed with Dudikova's takedowns. And Melissa Gatto, like I mentioned, is going to be bigger here, and she can be taken down. We have seen her taken down a fair bit, you know, Cortez, Sajara Eubanks, but she has good bottom game with sweeps and submissions. She has a good butterfly sweep, a triangle, an armbar she can throw up, and, you know, in most MMA fights, that's not what you want to hear, but in women's MMA, that shit works to this day. It is the year 2024, and women are still getting caught with, you know, armbars, triangles. And I just think that if Gatto ends up on bottom, I think Dudikova won't be safe in top position. And I think Gatto is the better striker. As I mentioned, several times before, the more natural flyweight. She's fought at this weight class before, and I think this line is actually generous on Gatto, so I haven't locked in a bet myself yet. You never want to be confident laying juice on women. That's a common principle of the Martian MMA betting school, but in this spot, I think actually Gatto is the side, and no real opinion on props for me here. Next fight is in the light heavyweight division. Ibo Aslan taking on Anton Turkalaj, a long-awaited rematch. We got Ibo -128, Turkalaj +108. Funny that Ibo's first fight in the UFC, I mean, they must have 50 light heavyweights on the roster, and they picked the one guy he's fought before. But the first fight, extremely sloppy bullshit fight. You know, Ibo is winning the fight. He ends up on top of a few takedowns. Both guys exchange some strikes. Ibo's landing the better ones. And then Ibo is completely gassed out in the second round. Anton ends up on top, lands some elbows, chokes him out. And in that fight, to me, it looked like Ibo was the better fighter while fresh. And it relied on Ibo slowing down for Anton to finally take over. So before the fight, pre-fight, I think Ibo's the side. You know, we already saw them fight. We saw them fight early on, and Ibo was getting the better of it. And I think that he will here as well. And Anton, I actually think this guy might have been getting worse since that first fight. I mean, he's a young guy, but he's fought in the amateurs for a long time. I just think he was more active and confident back then. And nowadays, he's looking unsure of himself. I mean, that he fought Tyson Pedro. It was such an easy opponent to beat. I mean, the game plan is so vividly laid out on how to beat Tyson Pedro. And he still fucked it up and got knocked out in the first round there. So I bet Turkalaj there. I'm still not over that motherfucker getting knocked out by bum-ass Tyson Pedro on the verge of retirement. And I think the Ibo is going to win the fight and probably knock him out. And before the fight, I think you're better off. Your Ibo, I think, is worth a bet before the fight, because as I mentioned with the live bets, you can always jump in on Turkalaj in the live bets if Ibo is slowing down. But honestly, early on, I think Ibo probably gives him trouble and might even knock him out in the first round here. So no confidence in Anton. Ibo doesn't look any good to me, but I think he's good enough to get past this matchup. Next fight is in the featherweight division. A lot of featherweight fights on this card. I think like four featherweight fights. And we have in the first one, Connor Matthews, Dennis Bazukia. Odds for this one have -115 for Bazukia, -105 for Connor Matthews. And, you know, early on, I was kind of thinking when I first heard about the fight, I was thinking it would be Matthews, but after watching some tape, I have decided that it's Bazukia. I believe he is, I know he is much more experienced. He trains at a better gym. He has way more time in the MMA cage. And I don't think Bazukia has like a super defined advantage anywhere here, but I just think that he's a little bit cleaner everywhere. Matthews, I think, is mostly an enthusiasm-based fighter. And we saw that very vividly throughout his career, where his first few fights, he's fighting bums. He goes out there and he finishes them in the first round. His first fight against Francis Marshall, where he's really tested, he runs out of steam quickly, and he's just clearly outmatched in that fight. And then his last fight against Farias on the Contender Series, he did look improved, but a lot of that was just all offense, right? He was just, you know, spamming strikes, spamming takedowns. His cardio looked good everywhere. His technique looked okay, but I just think that he was just kind of using his cardio and his activity to his advantage there. And he very well might do it in this fight here. But I just think Bazukia is a little more skilled in all areas, especially the grappling, where in this fight, I'm pretty sure Matthews is going to be the one initiating the takedowns more. And I just think his grappling is sloppy, man. I think he's going to be in danger of being submitted, reversed, or put in a much, much worse position by Bazukia here. So the line keeps coming in on Bazukia. I'm going to be playing the money line. I'm just waiting to see where it goes. I've already played the submission at 9-1 for Bazukia. I really envision Matthews initiating the takedowns here, maybe going on a single leg, you know, getting a little too high, leaving his back exposed. Bazukia takes the back and wraps up the sub. I mean, Bazukia trains with Aljo on a daily basis, one of his main training partners. And I just think that nothing this guy, Connor Matthews, does, who has six fights in MMA and 30 minutes in the MMA cage, is going to really overwhelm Bazukia. So if Matthews wins, I'm pretty confident it's going to be by decision. And I think, you know, finish-wise, it much more skews towards Bazukia. Let's see what Bazukia no scorecards is. Yeah, he's slightly favored, so that could be worth an additional bet as well. But I like Bazukia money line and sub in this one. Next one is going to take us to, in the featherweight division as well, Julio Arce taking on Herbert Burns. Odds for this one have Julio minus 400, Burns plus 300. Burns actually got bet a little bit. He was a bigger dog earlier in the week. And this is a tough one because both guys are coming off long layoffs. Burns almost maybe a year and 9 months. Arce maybe a year and 4 or 5 months. So considerable layoffs for both. And, you know, Burns is just kind of a weak fighter, in my opinion. I mean, this guy breaks mentally in the cage. His past two fights, we just saw him, you know, get the life sapped out of him in these fights. And I just don't think he's a guy who deals with adversity super well. I think he's a clear, a gasser fighter. And if the fight isn't going well his way in round one, I really don't think he's pulling it back here. Because Arce is a guy who builds as the fight goes on. He's a download your data type of fighter where he starts slow. He's a methodical guy. He had, you know, he had some 5-round fights before he got in the UFC. And I think that was actually good for him because he's really learned to take the fights, you know, nice and slow. And I think that he will be a much more... Burns, his style is just come at you, trying to get you out of there early, and if it doesn't, then he's fucked. While Arce is totally comfortable fighting to 15 minutes and, you know, outpointing you to a decision. So, big contrast in styles here, but you got to wonder, with Burns coming off the long layoff, with him, you know, redlining and coming up unsuccessful and taking a beating in his past two fights, is he going to change his style? Is he going to come out with that same aggressive style, or is he going to tone it down a little bit? Now, his style of takedowns, I think, could have success against Arce here. Burns could explode into a takedown, but I think once Burns lands his takedowns, he's very amateur in terms of taking the fight slow, and he rushes things. He has a good position. The good position isn't good enough for him. He rushes to another position and he loses position. We've seen this time and time again in the Aljo and Pineda fights, and I think it's likely to happen here. So even if Burns lands an early takedown, I'm not confident he's going to convert it into the most efficient strategy for him. I don't think he's going to do a whole lot with the takedowns after he gets them. So, that being said, Burns' submission round one is plus 800. I do think that's a huge portion of how he wins this fight. I think if it gets out of the first round, it should be all Arce at that point. So, money line, obviously, I'm not interested in the minus 400 for Arce. The bet I have on this fight is the over 1.5 rounds. I got it at minus 115. I believe it's still out there, minus 125 on some books. You got both guys coming off a layoff. You got Arce, who is a more methodical fighter, as I mentioned. And I just think that Burns maybe grappling here could kill some clock. I'm hoping that he doesn't submit too early because I'm hoping the over one and a half hits. So I have two bets on the fight: Burns sub one, and then the over 1.5. The Burns sub one is kind of a hedge for Burns' win condition. And even if Burns slows down in normal fashion, I don't think Arce is going to, you know, swarm him for the kill. He's going to be patient. He's going to take the fight for what it gives him, and he's going to be methodical in there. So hopefully Arce doesn't finish him early, because that would be a double loss for me. And moving on to the women's strawweight division next, Verna Jandrudova, Lupita Godinez fighting here. Pretty good women's matchup here. Godinez minus 209, Jandrudova plus 179. I actually have a bet on this fight as well, over 2.5 rounds, minus 270. Big juice, the biggest juice bet I've made in a while. But man, these overs in women's fights are just so profitable. I mean, they're often juicy. They're often minus 300, minus 325, 350, and you're thinking, oh man, that's too much juice. But guys, it's 70, 75%. These women's fights are going over in like the 80, 85% range. And they're long-term valuable plays. So over 2.5 for me here. A few things. Jandrudova coming off of, I believe, double knee surgery. Definitely one knee surgery, but I've heard it's double. that's significant. I mean, she is 36 years old. Very long career. You know, long grappling career. 22 MMA fights. Went pro 11 years ago, so that's not exactly an encouraging sign, right? Coming off a knee surgery, she had to pull out of the Tatiana Suarez fight. And, you know, Lupita is just much younger, more explosive, dynamic. But the thing about Verna is, guys, she's lost three fights in her career. Dern, Limos, and Dern, Ribas, Esparza. All three of those fights, she's won a round in all three of them. So she's extremely hard to shut out. Nobody has ever shut Verna Jane Dredova out. So with her line at plus 180 here, considering she's never lost all three rounds in a fight and never been finished, you know, that is compelling. But the knee surgery, the layoff is, that's actually not that long of a layoff, only 10 months. But I believe the knee surgery is enough for me just to stay away from Jane Dredova. And if you like Jane Dredova, I would advise taking her decision. It did drop down. It was at 4-1 early in the week, which was really good. Now it's, I believe, under 3-1, which isn't as inspiring. But I just think it's extremely hard to imagine a finish here. If it's finishing, it's Verna submission. I'm extremely confident that Lupi is not finishing the fight, because a knockout in women's, super low. Lupita's never knocked anybody out, and she has landed a few submissions, but Verna is the best submission grappler she's ever fought by a country mile. So if anyone's finishing here, I do think it's Verna, but I don't think it's super likely, and that's why I'm on the over 2.5. And it'll probably be a Godinez decision. The most likely outcome, according to the odds, is Godinez decision. But she's enthusiastic. She throws strikes. She attempts takedowns. She's getting more and more comfortable in the cage. She's significantly younger here. What, she's got to be 7 years younger. So I think Lupi will be active enough to win a decision here. So last fight on the prelims next, Nate Landwehr versus Jamal Emmers. Great fight here. Nate the Train, one of my favorite fighters. How could you not fucking love this guy? Minus 181 for Jamal Emmers, plus 156 for Nate Landwehr. And tough fight to call. Because I think pre-fight, I would say the line is about right. I'm not interested in betting Nate Landwehr before the fight, because Nate Landwehr takes a little bit to get going. You know, he's Nate the Train. It takes a little bit for him to accelerate, to get chugging along. And Jamal Emmers, you know, has some dangerous power in his hands early on. He has stunned multiple opponents. And as our man Gugabe often says, he says, you know, fighters have a first-minute chin, which, you know, means sometimes early on guys get hit early and they get knocked out earlier or easier than they would if it were in the second or third round. And there's some truth to that, man. You know, getting hit, you got to absorb a few shots. We saw with our man Julian Arosa last week, yo, this man has been knocked out 100 times. He got virtually knocked out versus Ricardo Ramos, and that's how he knew when to start fighting. He didn't even know he was in the fight until he was virtually unconscious. He's like, oh shit, the fight started. Time to start choking out guys with guillotines. And that's exactly what he did. Nate Landwehr's got a little bit of the same. You know, fucking Julian Arosa actually hurt him early on. Dan Ige was landing some big punches. Herbert Burns rocked him and knocked him out in the first round. So I think Nate is going to work his way into the fight, but that's why I'm not interested in betting him before the fight. I think it will be Jamal early on here. And Nate's got a good chance at working his way into the second and third here, but I have a feeling that this will be an Emmers decision. Most likely outcome, again, here, plus 150 for Emmers. By decision. Not interested in that bet by itself, but I do think the goes the distance here is a little generous. You know, it's minus 120, so they think the fight finishes around 45-50%. I struggle to see it that high. I think if Nate is finishing, it's going to be a sub, and if Emmers is finishing, I think it's going to be a knockout, but I just think they're giving them both a little bit too much equity. Actually, Nate's sub is 11-1 on some books. I think that's worth a poke. Nate's sub 2-3. He's hit that a few times in his UFC career, and I think that's what I'll stick with. You know, before the fight, Nate sub 2-3, but not a super confident read in this one. You know, I hate to pick against my boy Nate the Train, but I think Emmers has been looking better lately, man. I mean, he dropped that close decision to Jack Jenkins, which was a split decision that a lot of people thought he won, but that fight kind of proves why I have some faith in Nate here, because that fight, he hit a takedown in one round three super easily against Jack, but rounds one and two was competitive. It was competitive striking. Emmers wasn't putting up a super high volume, and a guy like Nate Landwehr, he really thrives as he gets momentum. He senses you slowing down And that's when he really builds and turns up the pressure, and his clinch striking is really, really good. And, you know, I think he could, you know, work his way into the second and third here and, you know, win this fight on enthusiasm and cardio potentially. So be aware of the Nate Landwehr live line in this one. But he also could get knocked out early. So that's why I'm advising to pass on the early one here. And even though I mentioned goes the distance, it won't be a bet for me. The only ones I have before the fight are Nate sub and the sub 2-3. All right, we breeze through the prelims. 8 fights down, 6 more to go. Starting things off in the welterweight division, we got Chidi Njikwani taking on Rhys McGee. Odds for this one have Chidi -141, Rhys +121. Rhys getting the more action of the two throughout the week. And we got Chidi dropping down to welterweight here. Now, this is another interesting fight because neither of these guys are that good, but I have a lot of thoughts on the fight nonetheless. First of all, McKee, for he's what, 0-3 in the UFC, you know, right? Yeah, 0-3 in the UFC. He's getting respect in the betting line, apparently, because people are betting him this week. I'm not exactly sure why. Also, he's also 0-3 in decisions for Rhys McKee. I don't think Chidi's got a bad record when it comes to decisions as well. 7-2. Much better than I expected, which is good because the bets I have on this fight are the fight to go the distance and Chidi Njikwani by decision. GGD is +350 and Chidi decision is +750. I mean, they're acting like these guys are fucking nuclear Ngannou hitters. I mean, -500 to end inside the distance. Are you kidding me? I mean, it should be a predominantly striking fight, and I think the sentiment is pretty clear amongst most cappers in this one that Chidi will win the fight early, and as long as he doesn't gas out, he should, you know, probably maintain winning. But he has slowed down in a significant amount of his fights. He is dropping down 15 pounds to welterweight here, and he's also pretty old, right? The guy's got to be like fucking 35 by now. And you know, Rhys is young, he's not that good, but he's 28, and I think he does have the more room for improvement out of the two. Yeah, 35 years old for Chidi here. But The fight that I'm looking at to draw confidence from Chidi is his fight against Albert Duraev, a fight he oddly enough lost by split decision. But in that fight, we saw him fight slower, fight the word I love using this week so far, methodical, right? He took the fight at like a medium pace, and he was able to fight the full 3 rounds. Well, he got taken down in round 1, and then he had a nice medium tempo striking fight for the second and third round. And with this guy, you know, He was beating Olechichuk up early, then he got knocked out later. He was beating Rodriguez up early, he got knocked out later. I think he's realizing, like, I need to stop going so hard early in these fights because I'm gassing out. So I think with the weight cut, with him losing his past few fights in similar fashion, I think we're going to see a more patient version of Njikwani here. And that's good for the GTD and the decision line for Chidi, because I think if he takes his time and just picks his shots and doesn't go too hard, he should be the much more skilled striker than Rhys McKee. And Rhys McKee is kind of a punching bag, man. I mean, he got lit up by Ange Lusa, got taken down over and over. Not going to see any takedowns from Chidi on this side. And even his fights in Cage Warriors, man, I mean, he's going to war with a lot of these guys. 39-year-old Jim Wallhead, you know, a regional gatekeeper over there in the UK, you know, extremely competitive fight. Justin Burlinson, kind of the same story, you know, close fight. He's more of a grappler though. So, you know, I have no faith in Rhys McKee. I foolishly backed him in that last fight versus Ange Lusa. We just saw Ange Lusa look terrible a few weeks ago. That was not an inspiring performance for Rhys McKee's future stock here. So I think Chidi money line is the side. You're better off waiting on Rhys live. And I have the goes the distance and Chidi by decision in this one for some big plus money. That's going to move us back to the featherweight division for the fourth and final featherweight fight on the card. The main card. They put Bill Algeo on the main card because they know that he brings the heat. He's taking on Kyle Nelson here. Odds for this one have Bill -236, Kyle Nelson +201. So, obviously, big fan of Bill, you know, relation to the guy used to train at his gym. I'm not going to front and act like we're friends. Like we didn't hang out all the time. But you know, I'm cool with the guy, still in contact, and always will be grateful to him for, you know, kind of getting me started in my martial arts journey. The first time I ever walked into a martial arts gym to do like a Muay Thai class, he was the instructor who, you know walked me through everything, taught me how to throw a punch, stand in the stance for the first time. So like I said, I'll always be grateful to him for that. But he's had a, you know, he's overexceeded my expectations in the UFC, honestly. I mean, featherweight's a tough fucking division. He came in the middle of the pandemic, and he had a real tough opponent in Lamas. And he's fought in a good, you know, spectrum of competition in the UFC. And I mean, he surprised me with some of these wins. Like, for instance, his last fight against Hernandez, I envisioned that one being a lot closer of a fight. He fucking made easy work of Alexander Hernandez in that fight. So on the other side, Kyle Nelson, an improving, surprisingly fun fighter to watch, man. I'm watching this guy's last fight against Fernando Padilla, and he's a unique fighter, man. It's almost like Kyle Nelson prefers to kick. You know, 99% of fighters in MMA prefer to punch when they're striking. I think Kyle Nelson is most comfortable when kicking. But something I noticed about Nelson is when he's on the front foot or you're not really pushing him back, he's comfortable. When you're pressuring him, his whole game kind of falls apart because he's not comfortable going backwards. He can't kick as well going backwards. And I think Bill Aljo is going to put that forward pressure on him and make Kyle Nelson less effective. And Kyle Nelson had slowed down in a lot of his previous UFC fights, not in his past two. He showed improved cardio against Bilder and against Padilla, but those were fights fought on his terms, on his pace. They weren't pushing him backwards in those fights. Padilla actually did in the third round, and that's when Padilla started having his best success. So I think Bill's going to not give Kyle his ideal range, and he's going to pressure him. He's going to make this a high-intensity fight. And I believe it will be a Bill Aljo decision here. And I think Bill probably will maybe mix in a takedown or two. I think we're going to be mostly looking at a striking fight, though. And Bill's, you know, extremely durable. I think he's been finished one time in his MMA career. No, he got submitted two times way back, you know, a fucking decade ago. But hasn't been finished in 10 years. Hasn't been finished in the UFC. He's been, you know, hurt a few times. He's been in some bad positions a few times, but he's extremely hard to put away. And Kyle Nelson has been finished a few times of his own right, but that was when he was slowing down. I think he's gotten more serious and more prepared in his past few fights. I do envision this one going to decision at a higher rate than -190, where the current line is. So I wouldn't knock anyone for taking that it goes the distance here, but I think Bill is pretty safe in this fight. You know, the line I think seems pretty accurate, and it will be a Bill decision. Moving on to the premier division, Nurmagomedov Ruzaboyev taking on Cedricus Dumas. To this one have Ruzaboyev -200, Dumas +170. Oh, a little bit of action came in on Dumas today. You know, he was in the +200s all week, and now he's come down a little bit. And I think for good reason, because, I mean, guys, who the fuck knows what quality of fighter Nurmagomedov Ruzaboyev is? I mean, this guy, you can watch every single one of his fights, and you will still not have a fucking clue about if this guy is good or not, because he finishes a lot of guys in the first round. He's got like 25 finishes in the first round. His past 9 fights are all first round finishes. Hasn't gone out of the first round in 4.5 years. And the last time he did, he lost by decision. You know, he's been a decision 8 times. He's lost 6 of those times, with a few draws mixed in there as well. So just a clear archetype of a fighter that he finishes guys early, but when extended, when an opponent provides resistance and goes into the later rounds, he's not as effective. And you can just clearly tell that by his fighting style. He's very explosive. He's very reliant on quick finishes. And, you know, we haven't seen this guy tested in a real fight in so long. I mean, the opponents that he's fighting in the regional scene are total cab drivers. I'm talking Armenian, Albanian cab drivers, or they're like, hey, we need a guy for this fight. And he's like, oh, who am I fighting? Oh, this guy is not too good. You know, he's from Uzbekistan. Oh, okay, I'll get in there. And the next thing you know, they're fucking getting their arm ripped off by a Kimura. The Bruno Ferreira fight, Bruno Ferreira is a legit fighter, but that fight was just so random and weird. Rozaboyev catches a leg kick and Ferreira's head hits the mat and he fucking knocks him out. I mean, that's a 70-second fight. We didn't learn anything new in that fight. Before the fight, we knew Rozaboyev is a dangerous first-round finisher. He has 24 first-round finishes. What did we learn in that one 75-second fight? Nothing. So Dumas is not good, right? He's not really extremely skilled in any one area, but I think he's decent at striking. He's decent at grappling. He's fought in the UFC a few times. He's gone to decision a few times. He's 3-0 in decisions, as a matter of fact. So, you know, I think Dumas will be a test if he can make it out of the first round. If Rozaboyev finishes him in some goofy fashion in the first round, wouldn't surprise me. However, it also wouldn't surprise me if Dumas survives the first round, if Rozaboyev just looks like shit in the second and third round and, you know, gasses out. So Dumas winning, I think, would probably look like getting on top in the second and third round and, you know, staying on top, wrestling his way to a decision like he did against Brundage. But man, it's a tough fight to have a confident read on. No bets for this one for me. I would just be looking to bet Dumas live because I don't think there's any point to taking Dumas before the fight because there's a very high chance that he gets finished early on. But if he doesn't get finished early on, I think his chances are going to be looking damn good. So wait for the live bet. Easy peasy. Nice strategy. Moving on. Premier Division again. Bruno Silva taking on Chris Weidman. The so-called legend, Chris Weidman. Now, I don't know if he's a legend in my book, but he's a so-called legend. Bruno Silva minus 240, Chris Weidman plus 205. So, I mean, it's hard to be confident in Chris Weidman in any fashion. I mean, he is plus 200 for a reason. You don't have to be that confident in plus 200. But 39 years old, he's coming off of breaking his leg into a million fucking pieces, right? You know, he did fight since then versus Brad Tavares. And then, ironically enough, he got his other leg torn to shreds by leg kicks by Brad Tavares. And, you know, it's tough to take too much from that fight just because he wasn't really in the fight too long because his leg was just getting destroyed. And outside of, you know, once the leg was destroyed, it wasn't really a fight. You know, it was kind of him surviving. So, you know, Bruno Silva has been taken out. We know that he's not a great wrestler, right? We saw Brendan Allen slice through him, easy takedowns, take him down. We saw Gerald Meerschaert choke him out late. I don't think Shara had any takedowns on him. He was actually the one landing takedowns on Shara. Wellington Turman, Andrew Sanchez were both schooling him for the first few rounds. But something about Bruno Silva tires guys out. Like, out-grappling him tires them out. So, obviously, you got to think that Weidman's win condition here is hitting multiple takedowns. Not something that he has done since the Omari Akhmedov fight back in 2020. And Omari's a solid fighter. That's actually a solid win. But, you know, that was 4 years ago. That was the whole leg surgery ago. That was a competitive fight nonetheless, too. So, man, I don't know. I mean, I'm not looking too confident in Chris Weidman. He's 2-7 in his past 9 fights. He's gotten knocked out a lot of times. His leg got destroyed. I mean, I think he's probably getting knocked out here. You know, I like Bruno Silva. I'm a fan of the guy. I hope he wins this fight. I hope Bruno Silva knocks Chris Weidman unconscious. And, you know, the New Jersey fans will be behind Chris here. Even though there's a little bit of a New York, New Jersey rivalry, they'll certainly be cheering for the fucking American here. I mean, even in Boston, you know, New York and Boston's got a bigger rivalry than New York and New Jersey, and they were still cheering out their ass for Weidman in that fight. So obviously the crowd is going to be behind Weidman here, and I just think it would be so funny to see Weidman laid out unconscious in this fight. So let's hope it happens, and I think it will, because even if Weidman gets takedowns here, guys, I don't think he's going to do a ton with them. And I think that Bruno will work his way back up. It'll slow Weidman down. And I'm going to go with, I think Weidman will win the first round here. People will be like, man, Chris Weidman plus 200, that was easy. And then at the end of the second round, it's going to be a Bruno Silva knockout. So, inshallah, Bruno gets it done. Next fight is in the welterweight division. Vicente Luque taking on Joaquin Buckley. In the welterweight division, as I mentioned, odds for this one have Luque minus 122, Buckley plus 102. So I'm looking at two angles for this one. So early in the week, I did bet Buckley moneyline at plus 124. And I think he is the money line side of the two, but I think the better bet that I've discovered on this fight is the fight to go the distance, plus 165 on DraftKings. And I like it for a few reasons. So Luque has been, you know, knocked out a few times in his career, especially by southpaws. Actually only one time in his career, the Jeff Neal fight, but he's been in wars. You know, this guy's chin is worn down. He's only, you know, what, 32 years old, but he's been in so many wars and he's been pro for 15 years now that this guy is not your average 32-year-old. He's shop worn for a 32-year-old. And, you know, was dead wrong picking against him in the last fight against RDA. That was a terrible performance from RDA. Another, you know, shot fighter of his own right. But what we learned in that fight is just RDA is a lot more shot than Luque is. So not a very relevant fight for this one. But the reason why I like the goes the distance is because of Joaquin Buckley's fighting style. And that's the reason why I've been on the goes the distance in several of Buckley's fights in a row. And the prices don't seem to be adjusting too much. Because he did score a knockout against Fiallo. He did get knocked out his own right of versus Chris Curtis. But the Chris Curtis fight that goes the distance was looking great there. Buckley's most recent fight against Morono, he did have him in a little bit of trouble there, but it eventually did stretch to the decision. And I just think that Buckley prefers fights that go to decision because of his style. He has a very circling oriented style where he likes, you know, being at long distance and then he works his way in, he throws a three punch combination, he ends it with a kick, and then he circles out. And guess what cage we're in this time, guys? The big cage. So that we're gonna have more room for Buckley to do his usual, you know, three punch combination kick circle, three punch combination kick circle. And Luque has never been a great cage cutter. That's always been a bit of a trouble throughout his career. He has calf kicked some guys real well and slowed them down from the orthodox stance, but Buckley's a southpaw, so he's not going to have that weapon as readily available for him here. So I think Buckley is the money line side. I slightly lean with Buckley's way, but I might get out of that money line bet on Buckley because I just think goes the distance is the best bet here. I think this fight is much more likely to be a slow, medium tempo fight where it goes the distance very easily rather than it is a Buckley easy win. You know, I would be a little shocked if Buckley easily beat Vicente Luque. But I wouldn't be shocked at all if this fight was just a slower, competitive kickboxing fight where either guy could win a decision. And Buckley might even hit some takedowns here. Both guys are liable to hit some takedowns. I think neither of their takedown defenses are really good. They both do mix in offensive takedowns a decent bit. So I think that's good for the goes the distance too, because I really don't see them submitting. If anybody's submitting, it's definitely going to be Luque. But I don't know, man. I think this one is going to be a competitive decision. I'll go 29-28 for Buckley as my official prediction, but I really like the goes the distance in this fight. So that's my official best bet of this one. Moving on to the main event in the women's flyweight division, back-to-back women's flyweight main events. We got Erin Blanchfield taking on Menon Fierot. Odds for this one have Blanche minus 185, Fierot plus 160. So when this fight was first announced, I was thinking, you know, I think Fierot might actually get it done. But I was rewatching some of her fights, and I decided to flip my opinion, and I now think that Erin will get the job done. And I think the line before the fight's about correct, 65% for Erin. That seems pretty fair for me, because I think it's a pretty common conception of this fight by most cappers as well, is that Fierot will probably be the sharper one, being able to avoid the takedowns early, and Erin's pace and her grappling onslaught will take over the fight as it goes later. And I agree with that, man. I think that Manon in the big cage will be able to land some strikes, skirt her way around, avoid the takedowns from Erin. And Erin's takedowns aren't very good. You know, she has landed a few clean takedowns in her career, but overall, she spent a lot of time attempting takedowns, failing them, getting, you know, her opponents against the cage, kind of having in some stalling positions. That's really the Talia Santos fight was. I mean, I don't think she landed a single fucking takedown against Talia Santos. No, she didn't. And she won that fight with just her pace, though, with her pressure, because Talia was outboxing early on. Erin got her nose busted early on, didn't deter Erin one bit. Erin, you know, got on the horse, she kept working, she used her cardio and was just constantly attempting takedowns, pushing Talia to the cage, controlling the octagon, landed some strikes along the way, and it was a competitive decision. You know, she clearly lost the first round, clearly won the third round, and the second round was real close. It could have gone to Talia's way, but I just think that what we saw in that fight was good. She absorbed some strikes early on. Her takedowns weren't working early on, but she worked through it. She absorbed the damage and she kept fighting. She kept attempting takedowns, and she used that good cardio of hers, that constant takedown attempt, to swing the decision in her way. And I think that's what's going to happen here. I think Manon will win the first round, maybe even the second round. But the nonstop pressure and the takedown attempts of Erin, I think, are eventually going to wear on Fiorot. And Erin is going to take over in the third round. And the fight is going to be all hers in the fourth and fifth round. Also, I was just watching Manon's fight against Rose. Man, dude, she looked fucking harmless in that fight. I know she's knocked a few women out. She, you know, broke Leonardo's arm with a kick. She knocked out, you know, Ricci, a strawweight, moving up in weight there. Her regional opponents, she knocked them all out. But she's gone to decision four times in a row against four legit reputable women. But I don't know, man. I just think that her power got way overrated early on in her career. She's not, you know, a super hard hitter. She prefers kind of, you know, I just think her punches are kind of soft. You know, her kicks are hard, right? You know, Aaron's got to watch out for the kicks. But I think Manon's punches are soft. And I don't think that any of those soft punches are going to deter Erin. I think Aaron's going to surprise some people and compete on the feet here, you know? That's what the fight comes down to, is that when it's standing, when it's in the striking, you got to favor Manon, right? But it's not unfathomable to imagine Erin having success on the feet. She can have little moments where she's landing her own strikes, where she's having success, and that. But then, in terms of grappling, it would shock me for Manon to have any grappling success in this fight. I mean, even if Manon lands a takedown by some chance, a combination of the two. But Erin's gonna, you know, sell out to get up. She's going to give up her back. She's not going to be worried about the jiu-jitsu of the French 35-year-old lady, the French 35-year-old kickboxer. Erin ain't concerned about that shit one bit. So the grappling upside here is, you know, 95% on the side of Erin, while the striking, I don't think, is going to be extremely one-sided at all. I think people are going to be surprised at the striking being competitive at times here. So my pick will be Erin, I guess, 48-47, maybe 49-46. And I have a bet on Erin round 4, round 5, plus 1,400 round 4, plus 2,000 round 5. They're long shots, you know. They're probably not going to hit. But if Erin gets on top here, man, who the fuck knows how Manon's going to look on her back? We've really never seen her on her back. And Erin's level of grappling and jiu-jitsu is so much better than anything Manon has ever seen before, that if Erin gets on top and just destroys her and submits her on the mat, I wouldn't be too surprised. So let's hope it's later rather than early. Let's hope Manon has the cardio and the takedown defense to stuff those takedowns early and make it to the fourth and fifth round, where I think Erin will potentially get her out of there. That's why I like those late props. So that is going to do it for me this week. A good amount of betting spots I like on this card, you know? A good amount of betting spots. Lagerin by decision, Petrosky moneyline, no scorecards decision, Ibo Aslam moneyline, Bazookia moneyline and submission, the over 1.5 in the Arce fight, the over 2.5 in the Jane Rodoba fight, Landwehr sub, Chidi and Jaquani by decision, and the fight goes the distance in that one. And no bets in the Aljo Ruzaboyev Silva fights, the goes the distance in the Buckley fight, and those late 4-5 props for Erin in the main event. So, decent card. Not quite good enough for me to make the trip over to Jersey, but I hope anybody who's in the Northeast enjoys the card. And I hope we get some good fights. Hope you are able to get some good information, win some bets, and I will see you all before the next UFC event next week. Peace out, everyone.